Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah Leduc. The Tony Award-winning revival of Cole Porter's Anything Goes, directed and choreographed by Kathleen Marshall and produced by the Roundabout Theatre Company, is ending its Broadway voyage on August 5th. It opened on April 7th, 2011, was scheduled to run for 19 weeks, and the run was extended three times. Sutton Foster opened the show in the role of Reno Sweeney, and when she left to film her ABC family series, Bunheads, Stephanie J. Block stepped into those tap shoes, and she will close out the run. Her other Broadway credits include The Boy from Oz, Wicked, The Pirate Queen, and 9 to 5. I spoke with Stephanie in New York. Stephanie J. Block, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much.
So, Reno Sweeney. Before we talk about playing that fantastic role, I wanted to ask you if it was at all daunting to consider taking it over after Sutton Foster left the show, considering the acclaim that she had earned in the role.
I think the blessing in the way I was welcomed into the show, the 23 hours of rehearsal and the sort of frantic, we got to get you in, phone call, can you do this role in a week's time? That was the blessing because I didn't have a chance to get in my head and to worry about how people would compare me or I can't do the splits or are my thighs going to look big in this costume? I mean, there truly was no time for sort of editorializing or the chatter in the head that usually, you know, confuses an artist. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was pick up the phone, say yes, show up to rehearsals, learn everything, and just kind of live in that sense of immediacy and joy. And when they say, you know, on theater, you really want to be in it from moment to moment, I had no choice but to be in it from moment to moment. So I think that was definitely to my advantage. Looking back now, thank God I didn't have the time to sit and ruminate on, you know, Sutton and her exquisite tapping and her perfect sounds and her splits, how that woman is so flexible, I'll never know. And, you know, I got to just develop the character the way I thought she would be interpreted by me.
And had you ever thought about Reno Sweeney before? Were you a fan of the show, Anything Goes, before? You know,
I was a fan of the show. I had the soundtrack of Patti LuPone, and that is such a wonderful, wonderful soundtrack, and one that I grew up to. But I also loved the older movies, and so I got to see Ethel Merman. I mean, it's had many different incarnations. I don't know, her interpretation, her being Ethel Merman, that sound always kept at the back of my head, just playing over and over and over again, and kind of infused my Reno. So I had never thought about playing the role, but I had seen it. Of course, loved the music. I mean, the score is absolutely genius. If it was posed to me, I would say, yes, I want to play this role. But since it wasn't part of my audition process or hadn't been part of my sort of regional theater world coming up until Broadway, I didn't even consider it. But sure, when I saw that it was coming into Broadway, I thought, oh, how great. What a fantastic role. And lucky, lucky Sutton.
And in the cast is Joel Grey. What is it like working with Mr. Grey?
Well, as you know, he's a legend, and for a lot of us, most of us, he has inspired us and really contributed so much to the arts. So knowing that I'm sharing the stage with him night after night is kind of a dream. He walks into the theater with absolute excitement. He still loves every single part of creating a musical and bringing it fresh to an audience night after night. And when you consider he's been with it now for over a year, I think he's going on his well over 400 performances and recently just turned 80 years old. I mean, that's someone you look at and go, holy cow, whatever I'm about to complain, you know, that my feet hurt from tap dancing or whatever the case may be, you really look towards him as a beacon and go, okay, that's the standard, and I have to perform and live up to that standard. He really is just a terrific example for how we all should be when we are in the holy temple of Broadway.
When did you know that you wanted to pursue this life?
For me, it happened pretty quickly. I sang for my church for my first communion when I was 7. I led the congregation, and I saw that the attention, I liked it. I'm going to be real honest. I liked the attention. And so I thought, okay, I've got a skill here. I can sing, and I can make people smile. So by the time I was 11, I started to take private voice lessons. And I'd say it was there shortly after that I thought, this is going to be my career. It's not just a phase, and it's not just something I enjoy doing on the side. This is truly what makes me and brings me the greatest purpose is when I sing and when I'm in front of people, you know, whether it be acting or dancing or so my parents knew pretty early that this just kind of wasn't a flippant remark that I like singing. Right. And with the private lessons and then the high school of the performing arts and constantly working my way up rung by rung by rung, whether that be community theater, dinner theater, you know, amusement parks, regional theaters, I made sure that I incrementally kept learning and growing. And still to this day, I think, you know, there's always something to learn, and I will take classes until the day I die.
What was your first Broadway credit?
The Boy from Oz. I thought it would be Wicked. I had come out. I'm originally from Southern California. So I came out to New York with the original company of Wicked, and we were rehearsing for the out-of-town tryout, which was going to open in San Francisco. And during those rehearsals here in New York City, my agent said, you know, there's a role. It's Liza Minnelli, and it's in The Boy from Oz. Do you do Eliza? And my whole mindset was, but I'm in the company of, you know, Wicked. And I was understudying Adina at the time. And I loved the musical. I had worked on the project for a couple years and just knew what it was going to be, which was going to be a big monster hit. Mm-hmm. But when my agents posed this opportunity for me, I did audition, expecting nothing in return other than I'm new to New York, so I want to meet new directors, producers, casting directors. And I looked at it as that. And then I got a call back the next day, which was on my lunch break from rehearsal of Wicked. And then the next week, I had a two-hour work session with Hugh Jackman. And about a half hour after I walked out of the room, they said, we'd like to offer you the role of Liza Minnelli. So I literally, once I got that phone call, then got on a plane to go to San Francisco to do the out-of-town tryout for Wicked, knowing that I'd be returning to New York with my Broadway debut as Liza Minnelli.
You said in that story that your agent called and asked, do you do Eliza? Did you already do Eliza?
No. I loved Liza. I knew her canon very well, you know, all of the Candor and Ebb stuff. Mm-hmm. I, of course, worshipped Cabaret, and I thought, you know, she, in and of herself, is just such an indelible star. And that's very funny because when I got the call, I started to cry thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be a lead in my Broadway debut opposite Hugh Jackman playing Liza Minnelli. Oh my God, I'm going to be playing Liza Minnelli. And I really started to weep thinking, how does one even start to form this character when she's a living, breathing, viable part of the Broadway community? And so joy turned to fear real quick. But that was my story. And, you know, it was interesting, that character. I still look to that as one of the biggest challenges I ever had, was to maintain a respectful interpretation, not an imitation, you know, not a Las Vegas show, mm-hmm. but really an actress playing another woman, and to service the story and to service the character with as much respect as I could find in portraying Liza.
Come take me, I'm ready for all that I've never tasted. Come wake me, let's make up for all of the time we've wasted. Touching the stars, I'm up here on Mars. I can barely breathe. Friends ask why I smile. It's 'cause all the while I've got you up my sleeve.
Did she see the show?
She did not. And I'm taking some liberties in saying this, but it's been told to me several times that those that know and love her the most came and saw the show in order to protect her, because it is a painful journey. And although it wasn't necessarily her story, it was that of Peter Allen's. You know, Peter Allen does die through the course of the play. Her mother, Judy Garland, dies through the course of the play. And we depicted her, I thought, as a beautiful friend, as a loving daughter, and it really was a beautiful portrait of Liza. But I think to sit in the audience and to watch that story unfold while people are watching you watching the story unfold, it would be a strange dynamic, and one that I don't know if she could have organically experienced, because you have thousands of eyes, you know, peering on you. So I think they were protecting her. I know that word got back to her that, you know, we were very, very careful and very respectful.
You were also in 9 to 5. How was that?
Oh, I loved it from the second it happened until the second we closed. I think the beauty of it is the kindness and the love and the excitement started from the top, which was Dolly Parton. So anytime she was in the room, which was quite often, she was very hands-on and very active in the whole process, from the early auditions to the readings to, you know, our Los Angeles out-of-town tryout, and then, of course, here in New York. And so when she was in the room, you wanted to be kind, and you wanted to be patient, and you wanted to make her proud. And so there was a level of really just beautiful kindness in the room. And sometimes, you know, when you're in tech rehearsal, or if it's a long day, or elements aren't coming together the way you want to, personalities can get heated, and, you know, attitudes can rise real quick. And she always was this beautiful angel kind of monitoring everything. And so it was pure joy from backstage life to onstage life for every second, honestly.
It seems to me, and I'm outside of the Broadway world completely, obviously, whenever I have the opportunity to interview people like yourself, people make very close friends in cast and stay in touch, and it's a family, not to be, you know, trite or cliched, but a family in a community. Is that, you're not going to debunk it now, but is that the case? Is that true?
You know, there is a lot of truth to that. I will say that because of the circumstances we are thrust into, you are with these people for any, if you're from the beginning of a show, creating a show, it can take anywhere from 2 to 5 to 7 years. So you're not only seeing them day in and day out, like a norm, quote unquote, normal job, but you're so invested and so vulnerable because you're all in a room creating. You're making asses of yourself, honestly, making huge mistakes or trying things out that are going to be massive failures, but you've got to try in order to create and get to, you know, the other side of building a successful character in a successful play or musical. And then you start spending then 12 to 15 hours a day with each other. And you're all holding each other's hand going, we hope that the audience approves. We hope that the critics approve. We hope that people recognize what we've created and enjoy it and care for it as much as we have. So that sort of universal or collective investment that we all place is really something that unites us. And to see each other in these moments of vulnerability or being frightened or being ecstatic or cheering somebody on because it's award season and they've been nominated or they've won, we really go as, like, as you mentioned, a family. There are highs and there are lows, and we are there for each other for 2 to 5 years at a time. Now, you do get this close bond, and then, of course, you jump to the next cast. And so you love everybody, and then, unfortunately, little by little, they become loving acquaintances. You know, you keep a handful of friends, but in a cast of 30 or 40, and then your backstage crew, you're looking at about 100, 150 people that actually are working, you know, day in and day out to make a musical work. So you can't keep all of those friendships or... But on Facebook, you're going to have a lot of buddies.
Yeah. And are you, you have 8 shows a week, 2 matinees. Do you, on days when you don't have a matinee, presumably, or maybe even those same days, I don't know how busy you are, audition for other things?
Oh, absolutely. I'm coming to you actually straight from a voiceover audition. So I get out as much as I can, but my agents and I have a great communication and a very open dialogue where if I'm just pooped, I mean, I know it's going to be a waste of time for me and a waste of time for the casting director. So, and it depends. I mean, if I'm auditioning for a musical and I have to belt my guts out and sing, you know, 12 songs and dance, and that's a different story as opposed to going on maybe a television audition or a voiceover audition. So we gauge it and check in daily, but auditioning never stops in this business. Right. It just never stops, because although we'd like to think that the gig is going to last long enough to keep you liquid, it doesn't always last that way. You know, a show can close or something else happens in your family that makes you reassess. And it's a little unstable footing. And I think it takes a certain personality to be in this business, to know that you're constantly in flux.
Stephanie J. Block, thank you so much. Continued success and great fun with Anything Goes.
Thank you very much.
Stephanie J. Block plays Reno Sweeney in Anything Goes, which will run at the Stephen Sondheim Theater in New York City through August 5th. To learn more about the show, visit anythinggoesonbroadway.com. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.